Let's go ahead and say it. Come on now. Bring it up.
I'm not. Well, I wasn't quite going Squarch yet.
Come
not
on quite, now. Let's go ahead and quite get into
yet.
It.
We'll get there. We'll
but what kind? I mean, what, that.
Welcome back to the Wet Podcast. We have another special edition. Brian, I don't know that we intended to start out this year doing so much deep dive into, as we call it, the sausage making, but we've been very lucky to have some pretty cool guests with Brad and Corey going back before the turn of the year. Today we have the man himself, Tuba.
Yes, Tim Smith. Good old-fashioned Tim Smith. We better known as Tuba. We'll find out why he's called
he
Tuba.
He will share with us. He is Brad's boss. Let's put it that way.
You know what I forgot? Damn it, Tuba. I had this. I thought it was going to be funny. I just popped into my head. If Brad Parker's not Festival.
Oh, I have some thoughts. I have some serious thoughts.
If Brad Parker's not Festival, it must be Tuba. I blew it. I had that written down.
It's kind of funny, the whole Brad is Festival, because he's denying it. It gets louder and louder, doesn't it? His denials. He thinks he protests too much.
If he's not, he shares a cubicle with the guy
yes,
who does.
He knows.
But funny. I put it on the front line of my sheet, so you're Festival, huh? And I forgot.
I'm going to guess Tuba is a little too busy for that.
He ain't Festival.
He's not Festival. But what a great get.
We'll get to that here soon. We don't have Taco today, as you can see. He's at Grandma's house again, right? He's such a good family member.
Yeah. And Lena, as I promised you last week, if you're interested in getting into this industry, today is your episode.
Oh, yes, Lena. That's right.
And we got another one coming next week. So if you want to know how to get into this industry, listen to the What Podcast. We know how to get you.
We at least know how to find the right people that'll tell you how to do it.
Brian, any news? I know we got the Who stage is moving, according to Festival, who gave us a shout out. Speaking of,
yeah, thank you, Festival. That's speaking cool. of which, Brad Parker's best friend, whoever you are. thanks for that. We definitely do appreciate it. That's the only thing. There was one thing someone asked me, and I said I would ask, so I'll throw it out there, and we'll let it see where it goes between now and June. It's not like I need an answer tomorrow, kind of thing. But there's a concern that the silent disco. Where is it going to go? Is it run its course? Or people? This is just people talking. You know, it's not coming from any kind of here's why I think that. It's just one of those. Is the silent disco maybe in jeopardy because it's been in that corner for a while? And we've talked there. The people who do this are saying the footprint of the Infinity stage is very, very big. So will that? Could that be a casualty? I'll throw that out there as a question that maybe Reddit can take and start talking about.
You know, they've moved. They've used that as a space eater.
They've moved it, and that's what I told the person who asked. I said, you know what? I don't even remember if it's there anymore at all, but they move it seemingly every year.
Yeah, ever since the year that the lowest turnout ever, they moved it to fill space so the place didn't look that empty.
Around. Like 2016 or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. But
that was one question.
We'll have to get, we've talked about it, and Brian Benson's name comes up a bunch in this interview with Tuba. Can't wait to have Brian and hopefully Steven back on. Brian, for you guys, longtime listeners will know, he's the one who books the acts, and he's a great guest. He's been on several times. Really want to hear his thoughts on putting this lineup together, but also on moving the Who stage. And we don't get into it too much today, but that is an interesting turn of events, putting it out in Outer Rue.
Brad Parker told us that it was going to be relocated. My guess is at that moment, 2 weeks ago, they weren't ready to announce that it would be outside of Center Rue yet.
Right.
And that news is, I think it matters. Because here's the main reason why Who stage has been upgraded significantly.
Yeah, it's very nice.
in the last few years. It is a really, really nice, small, intimate setting with the same technological advances of sound and stage equipment and lighting as the other tents. It's just on a scale, like of 20% scale of size and all that. And so it's a great sound. It's a great showcase stage. I've been there many, many times when it was Sonic Village, Sonic Stage 15, 20 years ago. Right. I think it's a really fun stage. Sometimes it's a great place to get some shade. And so...
Well, and I also wonder, and maybe it's something we'll have to revisit, you know, they put a lot of energy and money, you know, energy equals money, into animating, and sorry to use that term, but things out in Outaru, so much so that you wondered, were they taking away from Centaru? And so
now
maybe this
going
is a
other way.
Well, or maybe it's a more focused, you know, instead of having several things, one thing with this great stage out there. So we'll have to revisit.
Well, one of the things I saw people talking about that I hadn't quite thought about it yet was that, you know, it is the classic Bonnaroo story of just, I was walking around and I saw something, I stuck with it, and now I love it.
Yeah.
And people were debating and maybe arguing, debating, commentary, you know, commentating back and forth, dialogue of, well, that experience won't be the same out in the campgrounds. Well, then some people are like, well, it might be even better.
Right.
And then so many things back and forth. I don't know, because I don't live in the new age of the GA camping. I stroll it. I take a look at it. I know what it looks like, but I haven't lived it in a while. So I'm not sure, but I do think it's important because I've just really enjoyed that stage, and I hope it doesn't lose anything as far as, I don't know, importance, I guess. And we'll see. I think it's worth a try for sure, because also, too, I've talked about this a little over the years. I don't know how much. Centaru gets awfully noise polluted.
Yeah.
It gets really, like, there's one spot.
For sure.
Like, you can walk around kind of where the big village of vending is. It's almost like you find that one spot and it's just, I can't hear anything.
Right.
And so I don't, maybe it's good to pull some of those decibels out. And they're brilliant on how they have sound management, but you can't get away from the noise pollution at some point. Maybe that'll help that. We'll see.
Yeah. No, I agree. All right, very cool.
As far as news, I think we're good on that, and we'll get to Tuba now, right?
Well, here is our interview with Tuba, and thank you to our guy Ken for setting this up. Thank you, Tuba, for agreeing to do it. I know this was a big deal. We're lucky to have gotten him. He doesn't do this very often, so very cool. Here we go with Tuba. All right, I'm going to ask you to indulge me for a minute, because this is a big deal. I am so honored that you're joining us, but I've spent all morning thinking about it, and so I'm going to go back into Mr. Peabody's Wayback Machine. It's 2002. I'm 39 years old. Wow. I've been writing...
I was 22.
I know. I was going to go there. I'm 39 years old. My biggest concern is whether I can play my son at shortstop or pitcher in the All-Star tournament, and how can I do both? Brian is 22, and he's still trying to figure out how he can be 14 and still discovering Eddie Vedder.
Yeah, yeah. Never leaving the Pearl Jam grunge ethos if I could help it at that time.
And I go into work, and it's a Thursday, and they're like, the traffic is backed up to Chattanooga and Nashville for this festival called Bonnaroo. Get a photographer and go. And I'm mad as hell, because the last thing I want to do is sit in traffic. Right? Brian is thinking, there's probably a girl up there who's smoking pot, and I'm going.
Yeah. Yeah, find out what this jam band scene is all about.
Thing is about. And I go, and we walk in, and I've said this before, there's some people sitting under the tree there in front of the witch, as we all know now, with a inflatable bong, which I didn't even know was possible. It was like a two-piece blow-up inflatable thing. And I'm like, well, this is different. Don't go until 2007, and my entire life has changed. Don't know Brian then, Tuba. Don't know him then. But my world is like, I remember walking in and going to the media tent and meeting Ken Weinstein and like, this is big time. I'm hanging out with the Rolling Stones of the world, the Spin magazines, this is different. And it's an hour from my home, right? Completely changed my universe is my point. Brian, you've said the same, right? There's no question this festival has changed us. All of that to say, Tuba, you are what? You're in charge of all festivals for C3?
Yeah, you could say that.
To some degree.
So,
I mean, is your story similar, dissimilar? I mean,
as far as how Bonnaroo affected you, I guess is what you mean, Barry.
Festivals, all the way around Bonnaroo.
I mean, I'll admit, you know, when I really got into the industry what year was it? Too long ago. I think it was 2002 is kind of when I started working festivals. And that was just a summer job coming out of college to go work Wakarusa in Lawrence, Kansas. So I went to the University of Kansas and was originally doing production work for a production company actually that was 2004. So that wasn't even trying to remember the origin story here, but you know, I think it's, you know, Bonnaroo was always just this, you know, for us at Wakarusa, we were the little guys back, you know, over there. So it was like, you know, and that was back when you really had the festival tour too. So you go to, you know, Camp Bisco and you go to whatever it was, not Summerfest.
All Good was in there for
All Good was in there. I mean, like you could put together a solid 6 weeks, but Bonnaroo was always the anchor, you know, like,
so lock in in Virginia for a little bit.
And that's kind of where that's where I wanted to go with this because Brian and I heard you speak at Bonnaroo this past summer to students, and it's sort of this whole how does one get into this industry type of thing. I don't know that you do, right? I mean, there's not a school for it, but you can, right? I mean,
you can. I think, you know, I mean, it's great to touch on that first, because it's something I'm pretty passionate about. Is I've got a program in my alma mater that I put together, and the premise of it is just none of the careers that are in this industry are in any guidebook and in any you know like it doesn't exist. But at the same token, you can be anything in the entertainment industry. You want to be a doctor? Well, you can be a rock and roll doctor. You want to be an engineer? You know, you want to be an electrician? Like every single career and trade is represented in this field, not just festivals, but TV, radio, sport, you know, so there's a ton of opportunity there. And just trying to make the younger generations aware, you know, I mean, this for me being, you know, whatever it is, 27 years old now, you know, the beard is gray. I've turned into the old guy as much as I like to not think that, but
we all have in some way or another,
right? You know, and so, but you know, getting more people into the industry is you know, is something that we've all got to kind of do and work on. So I'm always happy to do whatever I can to help get students opportunities and awareness, and really it's just get your foot in the door. Go sling t-shirts, you know, for merch, go volunteer.
Street just team start. Kind of stuff.
Just start. I started as a stagehand in college. I'm pushing boxes and, you know, that's where I got the bug, you know, and some people start as a runner, but everybody started from somewhere, you know? So I think, you know, not to be scared of the process, essentially.
Since we're starting here, this is at the bottom of my page of notes I made. Let's stick with it for just a second. You talked about your, initiative, for lack of a word, I can come up with, the KU Leap. I'm assuming that's what you're talking about. The
live
event accessibility program that you started in 2018, according to your LinkedIn. But I wanted to make a note of that because last year there were so many students And I hadn't noticed that before. And if they had been there, I'm sure they have. But I hadn't noticed it to the level that it was. There was MTSU, maybe Tennessee Tech. I'm not sure how many other schools. And I thought that was just a really, really cool thing. Yeah. Because, damn it, I wanted to do something like that.
I didn't have it. I fell into it. I had a guy jump out in front of me. He's like, hey, you want to work at this theater? I'm like, I don't know anything about theater. Yeah. So.
If nothing else, I just wanted to have the access to hang out with people like
that's my point.
You and... Sorry, maybe else, and others, and even if it didn't turn into a lifelong passion project and or career, it certainly would have been neat. So that that was, if you just speak to that initiative you put together and how that's worked for you.
Again, that was just born out of, I'm like, how do we just raise the awareness for this? So I'll go back to the university at least once every semester. To go just speak to a seminar, that we'll put together. Some of my best friends there still work at the theater that, I got my start at. And so they're happy to host. And we try to bring in other folks from the industry to kind of speak and talk about their journey. And then the students can apply for an immersion experience. And what that is, all expenses paid. We'll bring them up to Lollapalooza for probably 5 days. And it's a little bit of a curated experience that way to have them come up and see Lollapalooza and talk to all of our amazing staff, they probably talk to 35, 40 people throughout that weekend, and get to see the festival, and just really understand what the industry is about. So, I donate some money to KU Endowment, and then C3 is gracious enough to match that, since it's a nonprofit. So it's fully funded that way, trying not to make sure we don't have a barrier to entry of your economic state. We want to make this open to all. So,
were you the driving force to do more of this student involvement with Bonnaroo specifically, or just portions?
No. I mean, Bonnaroo's always had a great history around this. Like you said, with MTSU. Belmont is another does a lot. Bonnaroo's always been there. To the degree for Bonnaroo, I just try to pour gas on the fire and see how we can enable that better. Jeff McCluskey, that's where we kind of got our touch point with Jeff McCluskey. Jeff does, we've now rolled out his program, Festival University to, I think we're at half a dozen festivals now and looking at more that we can do. Just trying to get more opportunities out there.
This is why I wanted to start here, because it's a passion thing, right? I mean, Corey and Brad, who've both been on this show, they started the same way. I basically started my career in journalism because I found out I got to go do festival or concerts.
It's a really common story, and I got right. a lot of that too.
Right.
Or the failed musician, right? I can't make it doing this, so I'll do this. I'm a little of both.
But right. I mean, you find out you get to hang out with musicians, right? You get to go to events. You get to go do this type of thing, right? I'm trying to think of other businesses. I don't know of any, accountants who are hanging out with accountants, doing mathathons, whatever. It's not the same. And I don't mean to make fun of accountants.
Yeah, it's a different world. I'm just saying
this is the way in, right? You just,
absolutely.
Yeah, you find your way in, and then pretty soon you're, getting paid.
Yeah, and I think... we're trying to paint a real picture of it though, too. Be like, look, it's hard work, and this isn't all, rock and roll and just watching shows. Surprisingly, that's very little of what I do anymore is these shows. But I think, it is real work, but it's that age old adage of, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Well, that's a good jump off. When did it change? When did it quit being, hey, I'm schlepping speaker cables for, my favorite band to, I haven't seen a show in forever, and now it's work. When did that change for you, and were you happy with that? What I mean?
I think part of this is just, I've been in the industry so long and I've just seen a lot of shows. you know? And so it's just, it's one of those, like, yeah, I love the Foo Fighters, but man, I've probably seen those guys 30 times, you know? So, so I think that's part of it. And just, you know, also, you know, a lot of my role has been around, you know, safety and security and trying to see a headliner set or something. It's like, that's usually when we're looking at egress and trying to make sure that we've got the outbound, you know, teed up appropriately there. So, but as far as an inflection point on that, I don't, you know, it's kind of been a slow process, you know, but I think that's the other message for the young ones to come in. It's like, you can certainly be passionate about music and entertainment. But that's not a requirement. You know,
yeah, be good still, at what you're doing, right?
I still love what I do every single day, regardless of which show I'm involved with. So,
speaking of what you do every single day, Tuba Tim Smith, your legal name, Director of Festivals and Strategic Initiatives. What does that mean?
Fancy title that means, you know, I'll catch whatever darts are thrown my way.
Logistics, so, essentially, is that one word, you know, answer?
That's maybe a not. Good question. You know, now you're forcing me to try to think through it. So, you know, so the I'm directly involved in three festivals, which is Bonnaroo, Sueños up in Chicago, and Lollapalooza. So I'm either the festival director or the executive producer for those three. But then I also have oversight of all of our brands. So that's including some of the internationals. So the reason for that is because of kind of the organic evolution of C3 and how, you know, C3 has grown, and we've, you know, like with Bonnaroo coming into our portfolio, AC Entertainment, you know, the Brads, the Coreys, the Brian Bensons kind of fold into our mix. So we've got these different components, and it's my job to make sure that we're putting the components together in a way that gives us, you know, a standard, standardized is a bad word for it, but just a minimum standard for how we produce our events. And that's everything from, you know, the nuts and bolts of gates and restrooms and things like that, but also down to, you know, we've got a process when it comes to doing on sales, and we've got a process around, you know, just how we operate the company. So, and that just gives us, you know, better information to be able to try to make decisions and try to see market trends to be able to follow, and try to just improve the experience and the product for the customer and the fan. So
if I were to compare it to a sports environment, it sounds a lot like just kind of like the general manager of a sports team. They have to deal with salaries. They have to deal with the ticket takers. They have to deal with the field, you know, the landscape of the field, like a little bit of everything. That's kind of how that sounded to me. And so maybe a simple answer is just general manager of all things festivals, it sounds like. And that's a long list, right? I mean, that's a long list.
Yeah. You know, but at the same token, like I really believe that, you know, C3's got the best in the business. And so I can't take much credit. I'm just trying to help guide and just try to enable everybody to you know, do their job in the best way that we can. So
along those lines, and this is where I wanted to go. So things like ticket taking, website, you know, safety, those things I assume can be pretty similar for events. How much do you have to worry about Lollapalooza being different than Bonnaroo from a fan experience? And I'm thinking like lineup or whatever, or can they be, you don't want them to be identical, right? You want different experiences. So where does that sort of change? Does that make sense?
You know, I think that, you know, I probably slipped up by saying it's a, you know, there's some templatization to this, because it's really a matter of respecting the brand and respecting the fans. And what, you know, Bonnaroo and Lala and ACL have been around for a long time.
Yeah, institutions, right.
Yeah, you know, and so we need to factor in the past and respect that, but also try to make these brands relevant for today's, you know, market and today's fan, you know. And so being responsive to that is and respectful of that, I think is the key piece of that. So, you know, and that goes into, you know, new brands that we're starting, the Railbirds of the world, the, you know, Ocean's Calling, See Here Nows, you know, those brands. It's like, well, what's the origin story for them? They're at the starting line. So how do we make sure it's not just a, hey, we got stages in a field that are going to have a band. It's like, what do you feel when you go to these events? What do you take away from that? Cause that's ultimately what people want is the experience. And that's, I mean, fundamentally, that's why Bonnaroo is, you know, top of the chart.
That's the root of my question. And I keep thinking about Brad, as you know, was on a couple of weeks ago. And Brian, I don't know, I mean, if it stuck in your brain like it did with me, but the fact that people wanted to do a kickball tournament, I mean, that just blows my mind. I get it 100%, you know, and to Brad's credit, it's like they didn't say no. It's just, how do we make a kickball tournament work at Bonnaroo? And that's the kind of thing in my mind that makes it different, makes it unique. The fact that he would even consider it, you know what I mean? And that's to my point of the question and to your answer, you know, Lala maybe doesn't want a kickball tournament, but Railbird might or something, you know what I mean? And that's what makes it fun and different.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
Well, the biggest thing you've done that we can, you know, noticeably tell, and we heard you talk about last year, we'll get to the specifics, but is infrastructure with the farm. And there's been a lot of changes over the years, but if you didn't know any better and you had a kind of an Instagram aerial view, right? Like, you wouldn't think this isn't that much different. It isn't that much different, but from bathrooms, flushable toilets to the throwing in more asphalt, where paths were dustier and just an earth. A lot of times people don't want their sacred land messed with. Everybody's pretty happy about the bathrooms. Well, I think we can all agree on that. But and you came in under this title in 2019. Is that correct?
I've been with C3 since 20. Well, I was a contractor before 2013, but I took full time in 2013 with C3, and then first touch point was 2015 with Bonnaroo, but that was just kind of coming in and trying to just learn. And I've been a close friend and colleague with Steve Feener, who is the festival director on the Superfly side for years, and he's one of my mentors. And so, so that was really kind of that first touch point with Bonnaroo.
Well, my question was going to be mostly around the fact that if 2019, a lot of changes infrastructurally are happening, and then 2020 is the ultimate change for everybody.
Let's go ahead and say it. Come on now, bring it up.
I'm not. Well, I wasn't quite going squash yet.
Come
not
on
quite,
now, let's go ahead and get into yet. It.
We'll get there. We'll
but what kind? I mean, that must have been a wild time. You're making changes because that's what you're going to do. As far as I'm talking changes like just aesthetically. And then the 2020 thing hits us all, and everything's now changing. Every industry is pivoting just because they can, for right or wrong, better or worse. That must have been a wild time, too, because you were given maybe even more opportunity to make change, because at that point, no one was going to complain. They just wanted their Bonnaroo back.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, full transparency, you know, with Bonnaroo, like, this is one of the greatest challenges of my career. Just because there's never been a handoff of a major brand. So essentially what happened in that time period is that C3 stepped in and AC and Superfly stepped out, due to the acquisition that way. So, and that's never happened. There's no guidebook for it. Like, how do you hand off, you know, a major music festival that way? And, you know,
one of the most unique ones in the world, by the way.
Yeah. You know, and one of the best, you know, so it's like, and so that, you know, that prompted me to ask a handful of questions of just, you know, how do we go about this? How do we, you know, what can we do to improve the fan experience here? And that goes a bunch of different directions, especially with Bonnaroo, of just, you know, how do we, you know, what things that I may see not being a long, you know, a lifelong Bonruvian, that I'm like, oh, we got, yeah, it's hot out here. We got to fix, you know, we got to fix the heat and it's dusty, you know? And I pretty quickly realized, I'm like, everybody knows exactly what they're getting into out here. You know, like, I don't, you know, this is, you know, these, and these are problems that may not be fixable. You know, and so I shouldn't say problem. These are, you know, items that are not fixable. So, you know, I think also challenging the team of like, I just, you know, why do we do, you know, X? Why do we do this? And the only answer that's the wrong answer is because that's how we've always done it.
Well, that's true in everything. Yeah.
You know? And so, and that leads into a bunch of stuff where, like, you know, again, infrastructure is boring. If infrastructure is done right, you never notice it, you know? And so, you know, but when you look at the customer experience coming in and having to wait just to get to the toll to be able to start setting up your camp, you know, whether that was 6, 8, 12 hours in the past. And I'm like, we just have to fix that. I don't, you know, however we're going to do it, we got to figure out how to fix that. So we, you know, we went down the rabbit hole on both exterior and interior on how we bring cars onto the site, but also how we park them. You know, it's like, get a more efficient parking plan and a clearer, you know, clearer plan that way. You know, and again, it's all, how do we get the fans set up in their camp and enjoying the experience that we've worked so hard to build versus having, you know, somebody waiting in traffic for that long.
But how much, you know, how much did it weigh in, too? Because, I mean, we've heard those stories. People say, I waited in line 14 hours and then I'm still going back. I love it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't, there aren't too many businesses that can say that. You
I'll
know?
Tell you though, that was wearing off.
It was wearing off.
Yeah, I was going to say, and with COVID, that, you know, there's suddenly a shift. True. Of like, all of a sudden, you know, people forgot. If I could take a time machine back and we could drive around the site on a golf cart in 2015 and then come back to today, you know, I think it would be, I think it would be stark, you know. And again, that doesn't mean 2015 was any lesser of an event than what we do this year, but you know, things like drainage, you know, the hurricane year in 2021, that was one that really just brought things to a front where we need to, you know, better position ourselves to be able to, I don't know that we could take a direct hit from a hurricane, but like if it's a wet, rainy year, we got to make sure that, you know, the farm is ready for people and safe for people. And so that's where roads and, you know, like, I mean, the main stage field that used to flood. I don't know if you guys remember that, like when it would rain hard, like it would flood. And so
the walk around from which to what was treacherous.
Yeah.
And so they put that bridge in for years. That was like that, the runoff and everything for else. Sure. And yeah, it just, I'm assuming that I wanted to get to the 21 year a little bit. We can do that a little bit later potentially, but I'm sure you found some exposure of drainage that you wouldn't have seen, because generally we're pretty dry in June. I mean, usually it's pretty dry. I mean, we've had some bad ones occasionally, but yeah, I bet that was eye opening.
Well, let's go ahead and bring up the Squarch, and not to pick.
25 minutes in, here we go.
No, not to pick. Part of the reason, Tuba, we even know who you are is because you spoke to a group of students last year and mentioned the Squarch, because one of the students said, what is a lesson that you've learned?
Yeah. Excellent answer, by the way, that day.
And yeah, it was an outstanding answer, and you copped to it. You were a big part of the whole, I'll let you tell the story, but, and I bring it up not because it's funny and I'm being snide, but it illustrates to me just how much this festival means to people, and how something like an arch can symbolize so many things to so many people, right? From a fan point of view, from our point of view, from your point of view, it's really pretty important. So, we can ask questions, or you can go ahead and relate your involvement in it.
Yeah, can you kind of timeline that one a little bit? I can try to
resurrect the timelines there, but
yeah, I'd like to know that.
One of the things that we were looking at was, just like how do we improve, what can we, kind of pour gas on the fire and try to augment or improve with the festival. And the arch was one that's, I mean, it's, I'm not going to tell you guys anything you don't already know, that the arch is iconic to Bonnaroo. It gets redesigned every year. But the reality, that it set in when I started kind of poking my head under the hood a little bit as I went and, I went and stood inside the thing and
there's a door. You could have gone in the old wood arch. I've been in there. Yes. Probably wasn't allowed, but I was there,
I went and stood inside the thing and like the entire thing's made of wood and it's been outdoors in Tennessee, in, middle Tennessee for 20 years.
Minimum.
And a stiff breeze comes and you can hear the thing creak. And I'm like, this is just, I can't look past this. And so we looked at it and it's like, this is not safe.
How far out was this from the show? Was this months out, 6 months out, a year out?
I think we started talking about it. It was one that we're like, how do we bring the arch into today?
The pictures that surfaced on Reddit of it on fire when it was being burned that everybody lost their shit about, that was getting pretty close to showtime. And it was like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
They're burning down the farm.
Well, I thought we, was that, I'm losing the timeline.
I
want
to say
it,
6 weeks. It was pretty darn
close. I mean, it might've been, I think it was farther out than that. It was a couple months, but I think the,
that's still close.
Too close. And so, the reality was like, okay, well, this thing's not safe. What's the best way to take it down? How do we deconstruct it? And it's like, well, it's made of, it's tinder. It's tinder, And
it's
so we were
easy.
Like, and that's, that's a miss on our part of just like, look, we'll burn it. The thing was on the ground in less than 10 minutes.
That took the picture with you guys and sent it off the road?
Look, it's, when there's smoke, there's fire. You can see it from a long ways away, right? So, that happened. And then, and the whole intent was like, how do we bring in an arch? We want to have, a video component to it. We want to make it more immersive. We want to, just bring this to life. And as we were working through the structure side of that, like it started becoming apparent that it's like, we're out of time to be able to be able to make this fabrication to do it right. I was like, look, I can come up with the design, but with off the shelf parts. And what that's really what everybody ended up seeing is just, and the intent with that, again, this is all with the best of intentions. This was, we wanted to really do something that was going to improve this for the fans. And so I was like, well, look, we'll put a video screen up there that literally is bigger than the old arch, And so we could put, and then the ideas started coming of like, well, we can go and render all of the old arch designs in there. We can, the content options are boundless, but it's also this giant black monolith out there that just, didn't resonate, And one thing that's great about Bonnaroo fans is they will let you know, And so
this is my point. I don't mean it piling on. I mean, people care. It's the passion thing. That's the whole point to me.
Yeah, for me, I mean, we came in early for the media walkthrough on that Wednesday or whatever day it was, mainly because we wanted to get our eyes on this, on the Scorch. And in the daytime at noon or whatever time we were there, boy, I know I was being a snot about it. And I was like, this is what they're doing. But later on at night in the next 2 days, I saw it from a distance at night. And I was like, oh,
with the video screens, yeah.
With the video, now I see what they're talking about. Now I didn't know where you were going to make this. I mean, incredible new LED. I mean, that thing. Jeez, man, what a job on the arch now. My God, it's the gorgeous,
right?
The prettiest it's ever been. But I couldn't get that far at that point. So even with, it was a prototype. I mean, essentially, not a great prototype, but it was a prototype.
Yeah. Yeah.
For what you for what your vision was eventually.
I mean, I think that, you know, the root point here is like we've got to be brave. You know, the founders, you know, Rick and Ashley and Carrie and the team, those guys, you know, the bravery that it took to go out there in a field and do something of this scale is just crazy. And so,
yep.
You know, and that's really kind of the ethos of the, you know, Bonnaroo, but also the festival industry. It's like, you gotta take a leap and hope that it's something that resonates and sticks around. And so, how are we going to do that? How are we going to continue to move Bonnaroo, you know, forward and evolve and make it better? And so, you know, that was I think with that in mind, like the Squarch was a miss, but I think it's also one that like now can live in Bonnaroo lore, you know. So there's,
oh, yeah.
And that's, you know, that's not the only miss that we and I have had with Bonnaroo, but I think the list of things that we've tried and executed to improve the festival is way longer than the misses.
Well, so. Along those lines, so how do you, who is the part of the team that says, no, you know, kickball, you know, it's a good question. We can try kickball. Let's go try. We can try a squarch. How many people are in that team, I guess, is part of my question that says, okay, I like the idea, but no.
It's a small group. You know, I think, you know, my bosses will weigh in on it to some degree, but I mean, we really have deference to like Corey and Brad. Those guys have lived the festival, you know, and it's like, those guys are really the, you know, in my opinion, the kind of the breathing heart and soul of everything we do out there, just because they live it and they experience it. So, but we're constantly, I mean, year round, we're trying to come up with, you know, what are new ideas, what are new things that we can do. That's where the infinity stage kind of came in. That was one that kind of came our way, and it was like, I don't know, that would be cool. And then we shipped Brad over to Thailand to go check it out in person, and he was like, yeah, this is it. This thing's awesome. So
let me ask along those lines, because you guys put a hard shift, if that's the right word, into EDM back in, you know, whatever, 6, 7, 8 years ago.
Yeah, almost 10 years ago.
And,
really.
You know, Brian and I, we're not EDM guys. So, I mean, for us, that was like, oh, my God, you know.
Yeah.
Used to be. What happened to my jam band festival? And now it's an EDM festival. What was that conversation like? Because you guys, I mean, you were way ahead of the curve. You made the right choice for sure.
Yeah.
You saw something coming. What was that conversation like?
You know, I think that's a great question. And full transparency, I'm not in the middle of the talent buying side.
Yeah, you're not buying talent, but
I'm. You know, I mean, again, Benson and Bobby Clay are some of the best at that. And you know, I think it's, you know, when we talk about this stuff, it's for me, it's top end, and I'm like, okay, if you guys think that's good, then great.
But I'm guessing your opinion counts in this room, though. I mean, I would
it does, and you know, but again, I'm fully aware that my own musical preferences are not what's gonna,
yeah,
you know,
check it at the door for the festival.
You know, so, and I always joke, I'm like, the artist that I would put on my own festival, I'm not going to sell any tickets. It would be about three other people.
I'm getting
that
way too.
Like,
I think it's us.
Like, this actually, is awesome.
We'll all go together too, but we'll have our own festival.
Yeah. You know, if I got a festival and on top of that, like, oh, there's only 10 people here. It's real comfortable.
Yeah.
You know,
anybody seen the Eric Cartman, South Park, Eric Cartman land where he buys the amusement park and he's the only one that can go. That'd be a good one to reference. Sorry.
I get it.
But I think that, you know, the root of that question is like, you know, we want to be responsive to, you know, I mean, you know, we've had rock and roll out there, and I think now we've kind of, you know, one of the things I love is like, you've got Korn, and you've got, who do we have? ICP last year, or Gwar.
Gwar.
You know, we got Megadeth this year. And I'm like, I just love that we've got, you know, kind of a toehold for that in, you know, at this festival. But I think, you know, it's really, you know, EDM is a big part of what, you know, the core fan wants to see. And so, we've got to be responsive to that. You know, we need to give the fans what they want. And that's where the real trick with talent buying comes in with Benson and the team is it's their job to book what people are going to want. You know, it's kind of you don't know that you need this yet, you know? And so Chapel Roan's a great example where it's like,
yep.
When she was booked, you know, it was like, no big deal. She's going to be in the tent and at whatever it was.
Yeah, 2 o'clock.
Was the original.
Yeah.
2:30.
Yeah.
I mean, and 6 months hands later, down, not just Bonnaroo, all of last year, she was, you know, biggest artist on the road. It was crazy.
One of the wildest things I've ever seen. Yeah.
We call that green bananas. We want to book green bananas that green are going to ripen once they get to the festival. So,
industry jargon. I love it. Hitting green bananas.
Nice. Along those lines, again, how do you make sure that the different festivals are different? I'm going to guess that has to be something that you're a big, big part of. You have to figure out how they're similar. You got to make sure people get in and out. They're safe, right? Those are all similar. But how do you make sure they remain unique and specific to their area?
I mean, you're right. The backbone and the foundation and that can be the same, but when it comes to a brand,
especially when you're talking about Lala and ACL and Bonnaroo, those are really three unique festivals. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, those are big, but those are but I think that's where if you go to Lala, it feels like Chicago's festival. It feels like what it is. ACL is Austin, you know, like an ACL. If we swap those and put Lollapalooza in Austin, Texas,
like, what the hell?
it's not gonna be the right vibe. It's not gonna work. And so, again, you know, Railbird in Lexington, Kentucky, you know, like I think there's tons of these that are, you know, what's the city and what's the culture in that city and what's the vibe in that city, and then you know that bleeds directly into the fans and what's going to resonate with them. And so I think that's really the core of trying to, you know, make sure that, again, it's not just stages in a field that we're going to throw some, you know, cacophony of bands across. It's like, no, we want to curate this and make it relevant to, you know, the folks that live there. So
back to more infrastructure of the farm and Bonnaroo specifically, the flushable bathrooms. I mean, I don't know what people thought about. I don't know what Reddit said about it when it was first coming up. I can't imagine anybody would not enjoy this idea, but it's a hell of a game changer, is it not? From my vantage point, who admittedly doesn't need this as much as the other 75,000 do.
Give it a couple years.
Yeah, we'll see. I meant more of accommodations, that's been a game changer. Will you speak to that that addition and how that's gone?
Sure.
I think I remember you telling a story that might have said some of this went south on you.
So
if you don't mind telling that again.
One of the departments that reports up to me is called USFO, and we own and operate I think it's about 30 semis of that semi truckloads worth of that vacuum toilet product. And so
the
I know way
Jones.
Too much about, yeah, I know, yeah. I know way too much about that, but,
an expert on portalettes,
but fundamentally, when you look at, again, flashback to 2015 at any festival and you've got a construction port-a-john there, a chemical toilet, like it's a bucket in a box is really what it is, you know? And if you,
it's an outhouse.
Fundamentally, if you ask patrons, specifically the female patrons, what is the worst part about going to a festival or an outdoor event? That is always it.
Yeah.
Top of the list. And so how can we, you know, and this fundamentally comes down to like, what are we going to do to differentiate our brands? You know, what are we going to do to differentiate these festivals and improve the experience? And so we made the investment in that product. And there's a whole, again, we can go down a rabbit hole on it. I mean, there's a whole litany. It's better for the environment.
We got a few minutes here.
You know, it uses less water. You know, better experience. It's cleaned throughout the day, not just one time, you know, with a power washer. So, you know, we're real proud of that experience that we can give to the fans.
See, again, this is the stuff that we love. We love the sausage making.
Not flashy.
It makes a huge difference, man. If you've got a clean toilet versus you don't have one, that's a bad day.
It's a change. There was one day, just a quick anecdote, where I don't know, it was probably 2019, and it was before 2020 anyway, and I stayed right outside the arch with some friends, like a satellite camp, and then wake up in the morning like, oh my God, I walk right through there. And there, I hadn't used them yet. And it wasn't that busy. It is a day life experience, mindset, soul changing experience. Your whole day is better. It's quite amazing. I don't know what it's like at peak times during the week or during the weekend. It might be a little difficult, but you know, it's a big festival. So
I could think back to 2010, 2011. I saw something I hope I never see ever again. So
yeah, please leave it at that.
We'll just go from there.
Because I could say that too, and I'm going to leave it at that as well.
Yeah. All right. So what is the state of the industry? How does it feel? I mean, there's all kinds of stories. Music festivals are this. Music festivals are that. They're coming. They're going. They're up. They're down. They're
pausing.
They're pausing, where the boutique ones are pausing. From your point of view, and you would be the guy. You would be the guy to ask. What's the state of the industry right now?
There's a lot to that. You know, there's. I think that the state of the industry is strong. You know, I think there's. You know, regarding, you know, and specific to festivals, you know, festivals, you know, coming out of COVID have gotten a lot more expensive to produce. And that's both just physical expenses on site, talent expenses continue to go up. And so, you know, that's one where, you know, fundamentally, you know, it is a business and we need to, you know, we can't lose money, you know? And so how do we put these together to be able to try to, you know, make sure that we're staying, you know, financially viable. You know, and I think, that's one of the bigger challenges that we've had. It's also massively competitive, you know, competitive marketplace. There's a ton of players out there. There's a ton of events. And on top of that, we compete with concerts, stadiums, arenas. And so, you know, you need to look at how, when folks are, you know, you call it the experience economy, you know, how people are moving through that is dynamic. So that's where, you know, like this, you know, 2025 is probably going to be one of the biggest years for stadium tours ever. And so when you look at that through that lens and, you know, not specific to Bonnaroo, but like Lollapalooza needs 8 headliners. And so when you look at Soldier Field in Chicago, that's going to program more shows than they've ever programmed. And we're literally a couple hundred yards to the north, you know? And so what does that look like for the dynamic? So it's, you know, but at the same token, you know, again, getting into the sausage, as you called it here, it's like, you know, a stadium ticket is expensive, you know, concert tickets, all that, you know, that's one that everybody's, you know, it's very expensive. And the festival ticket is a real good value proposition. You know, like, sure, you can go to the stadium and see your one band that's your favorite, but you can go to Bonnaroo and see hundreds of bands, you know, for probably the same ticket price.
Many times, absolutely, yes.
You know, so I think that, you know, I think it's strong, but it's always, you know, it's a cyclical business very much, you know, it's like, and if you guys look at the past 20 years, you'll see there's a, you know, a bunch of new festivals and then, it kind of comes back down and then there's a bunch of new festivals and it goes up.
It's been happening for 20 years too. I mean,
that's healthy. You know, I think that's a healthy competitive, you know, business, you know? So, But I think it's strong. You know, competition makes us work harder than we ever have to try to innovate and try to make things better. You know, with expenses going up the way they have been, we're proud to, you know, for the most part, we've been able to keep our prices pretty flat as far as tickets go. So
what's the appeal? Why would arenas all of a sudden, you said they're going to be picking up arena shows?
I actually did kind of think that too. I'm going to a couple of them. Pearl Jam. I just went to Billy Strings. I'm doing a couple of these arena shows.
Is it because they've been, we haven't seen them in a while? I mean, are they doing extended light shows?
It's really,
I mean, just because it's new.
You know, if you know, when you talk to Benson or any of the talent buyers, it's really just who's working and who's available. And we're still, I think, this is my opinion. I'd have to talk to, you know, Benson and the team just to see if that's true. But, you know, COVID stopped everything. Coming out of COVID, everybody wanted to work. Mm-hmm. And so what happens 18 months after everybody works? Well, then everybody's going to be off.
Take a break. Right? Yeah.
And so you have a shortage of options for talent. And that's where you'll see a lot of this narrative around, oh, well, all the festival lineups are the same. And it's like, well, there's a limited number of acts that are working, you know, so, and, you know, and it's not as simple as, you know, hey, we just, you know, you may not be on tour, or you may not be out. We want you to come to the festival. It's like, it's not.
Well, and we've talked about this here recently that, I mean, a lot of these artists are hitting these arena. If you can fill an arena, that's where your money is. Like if Pearl Jam doesn't need to play, not that I think it would be a good booking anymore in this day and age. My favorite band ever, in case anybody doesn't know, but they don't need to play Bonnaroo. It doesn't that right. doesn't hit all these arenas and make all this money. And that and there's countless there's Lady Gaga's and whoever else, you know. So I could see that that challenge for sure. I'd like to go back real quick infrastructurally to the farm itself. The laying concrete more and more down, is that going to continue? And has that been? I lose track of where it's happened. In 2020, my birthday's in April, and so everything's shut down. So what do I do for my birthday? I drive to Manchester, jump the fence, and I hang out on the farm. It was a beautiful day, and just chilled. It's one of my favorite things to do, and it was the first time I noticed Production Road, which is maybe the busiest road in all of the state of Tennessee outside of I-24, for a four-day stretch, which is just the y'all's road where you're back and forth all day, artists. True. Everything you can think of.
Golf carts galore.
And there was concrete laid down. And it's the first time I'd seen maybe a slab of concrete on the entire, I mean, that stretch. And I was like, I think I text you, Barry, I don't know what I think about this. What do you mean we don't know what we think about it? That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Is that getting all into Centaroo with the pathways that we're all used to? Are we getting all that asphalted down, or most of it?
I think we did fourth last year. I think fifth might be done too, through the center. So I think I'd have to look. I'm pretty sure Centaroo, the main north south roads,
I think
there
it does.
Are done.
Yeah, I think it does.
You know, but we just kind of try to throw a few nickels in the bucket and do a little bit more each year.
Because my thought is, you know, of course, key, this is a good idea. Points. But is there runoff issues? Do you have any other kind of things that nobody's thinking about, unintended consequences for throwing more concrete down? It's all pretty flat in those areas, so probably, you know, maybe not.
The site is very flat, and that's one of our problems. I think the total elevation change from the arch to the, you know, to where the admin compound is, I think is 2 feet, maybe eight,
so
maybe
it,
18
it
inches.
Puddles up easily.
You know, so it's when we get a heavy rain, it's like, where is it going to go? And it's not going anywhere in a hurry because we don't have much change of elevation there. So
this is that sausage making.
I don't know of any
sausage making that we love. I love this stuff.
You know, yeah, this is the nerd stuff that just sticks in my brain for some
reason.
I can't remember.
That's what we love.
Can't remember people's names, but I can remember that kind of stuff. So, you know, as far as, you know, I'm not aware of any negative impacts of having some more asphalt out there. And again, it's really to make our, you know, how do we make the operation more robust, and how can we service things better, you know, and just, it, again, it seems boring, but if we can't get the trash trucks and the Porto trucks and all that stuff where they need to go, then instantly the patron experience is going downhill in a bad way.
Yeah. And if you can keep a ton of dust from going up everybody's nose, that'd be nice too. Right. That helped.
Do you have this is such a silly question. Do you have a favorite? Do you prefer a camping festival like a Bonnaroo or a city festival? Or do you even think along those lines?
I don't know that I really think along those lines. I mean, I got my start again from Wakarusa. I got my start at camping festivals, you know, so that's kind of bringing me back to my roots where I started. You know, I'm biased because I've, you know, out of the 21 years Lollapalooza has been in Chicago, I've been involved in 17 of them. That was one, somebody asked me that question. I literally had to count it up on my hand. I was like, holy cow, I've been around way too long here. So yeah, I'm a little biased towards Chicago. I think ACL is great. You know, I think the Lala international expansion has been one that's just been fascinating and taking that brand to new markets and seeing what those, you know, what our partners in those markets make the, you know, again, make Lollapalooza relevant to their country, you know? And so we just literally this, what is today? Today's Sunday. Today's the last day of Lollapalooza India in Mumbai. And so just, you know, there's so many things like, and it's, what India has done with the creative side of things. I mean, it's just really, really great. And again, it helps us again, do better on all of our events, just seeing how, you know, the creative side can get invigorated from other countries. So
I have I have plenty of just random notes to self here on things that probably won't even get to. The last one I want to make sure we get to here as we get closer to the end of this. Can you take us back to 21 going into the fall and the canceled hurricane? Can you just give a little bit of a timeline and your thoughts on how you guys were watching that in real time? I can tell you how the fans were doing it. You know, cuz I'm sure you watched online to see how was that, and from heartbreak to frustration to anything you want to throw in there. I'm fascinated to know how that came together in y'all's heads as you watched it happen.
I mean, slow torture is what it was, you know. I mean, it was just, you know, the it's just, you know, life gives you irony every turn, you know. And I think when we shifted the event to the fall, in one of our public safety calls, somebody just joking, they're like, well, you know, September's hurricane season, and we all laughed. And then like seeing it, what, I don't remember what the name of the hurricane was, but seeing that hurricane spool up, and then it's like the track start, and I'm just like, no, we can't, you know. And this is coming off of COVID year where, like,
you're a year and a half 20, later.
2019 lineup, I think, is arguably potentially one of the best ever. And it's like, just rip your heart out that you can't play the festival that year. And we're like, okay, well, now we've got a line of sight on being able to come back in 22, and we're just going to get the event in the fall so we can get it in and get people back out there. And then just ripped our heart out on that thing. We fought kicking and screaming to make it happen, but it's just like at a certain point, just the totality of the circumstances, just, you know, we can't produce a safe event. Like, that's really the number of cars we'd have to park out there, and this, there's standing water on the high ground. I mean, it was nuts. So, that was really hard. That's probably one of the more difficult points in my career of just, I mean, we've been working so hard on it. We're so excited to be back out there, especially after COVID, and then just,
There's so
a lot of tears, a lot of tears.
There's so many variables that make that fascinating to me. And that's why I wanted to bring it up. Just the idea, forget everything, forget the artist, forget everything you do on a daily basis. Just the idea that you set the whole place up and it's beautiful and it's ready and it's lit, like turned on lights. It's ready to go. Well, as soon as it dries up next week, we're going to tear all this shit down. My God, how defeating. Holy jeez.
I mean, you want to talk about defeating is, you know, there's no nicer weather than the backside of a hurricane.
Yeah, every time it was gorgeous.
Every time in the South,
perfect,
just perfect. Gorgeous.
And it's just like, here we are.
85 degrees.
I mean, you know, the events, you guys saw the pictures. The site was just, it was a mess.
It was underwater. Like, there was no,
yeah, but all right. So silver lining guy here, that's me. So many cool events happened that weekend with all the mini roos, right? That had to be sort of heartening for you guys to see. I know you saw it. I mean, all the different bands that rallied Chattanooga and Manchester,
we had a few here.
Huntsville. We had a few here. I mean, there were so many mini roos, right? People just dealt, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's all you can do, right? I mean, it's, you know, you can give up or you can do something about it. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that's the, again, the hardest part, in my opinion, the hurricane year was just COVID happened. And then we delayed, you know, we moved the event to September in 2020. Cause we're like, we don't know when this is going to be over. Yeah. So let's just, we'll push it off. Just
kicking it down the road. Yeah.
And then, okay, well then that cancels. And it's like, we're going to do it next spring. And then it's like, nope, we're not going to do it next spring. And it's just, you know, it was just a, you know, the circumstances were a real bummer, but like the fans just got run through the ringer on that, you know, and then to have the triumphant comeback taken away by a storm of all things. It's just like,
it's a wild story. It really is. We're all so used to it. We're all real used to it. But if you told me that now for the first time, I'd be like, Jesus, how did Bonnaroo ever survive? How did it ever survive?
This thing's gray, you know, because of that, you know, I mean, it's, you know, but we're excited this year. This year's going to be amazing. It's going to be great.
So yeah. Anything really for this year you want to, you know, throw out there that you're most excited about for this year?
Oh man. You know, Infinity Stage, I'm super stoked. You know, all I've gotten is just, you know, the words from Brad as far as how cool it is.
Dude, every person on the farm wants to go there. It's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a
problem. Well, we're working through that too. You know, we're really excited about that. You know, we're doing some things that are going to kick the other stage up another notch, and do some things there.
Already looks like it's as good as it can get. Now, I don't know what an EDM stage is supposed to look like, so I'll yield to you on that one.
Trippy.
Well, that's all I knew for sure.
You know, so I think, you know,
let me,
Having Luke Combs on the farm, like I'm stoked to see Luke out there. I think that's going to be great.
Fun Thursday.
Let me ask. I got one more. And it's something that I was thinking about this morning. I have to remind myself, and we haven't really talked about it, but I think from hearing from Brad and Corey, about half of your ticket buyers are new every year, first timers. So you've got the other half who are like me and Brian. Brian's been there every year since the beginning. I've been to almost all of them. We're fully committed. But then you've got brand new, you got 18, 19, 20 year old kids who were just coming out of high school. Right. This is their first time. That has to be an interesting conversation. And I know Brad has talked about it as far as like, you know, you guys always try to be in front of the zeitgeist and you mentioned it earlier. But that has to be an interesting conversation.
The balance of keeping people who are OGs and then the new people who don't know any better, it's got to be an interesting kind of thing to kick around.
Well, it's, you know, it's really kind of a circle of life conversation. Like we all grow older and that changes. And so we, as folks are getting off the train at the end of the line, we got to make sure we've got as many people or more getting on the train, you know, to go on that ride with us. And that's one where, you know, we have identified that for Bonnaroo as one of the challenges of just, you know, it's a commitment, you know, like it's a real commitment. And I know there's a lot of passion around the single day ticket discussion. You know, but that's one where if I've got somebody that's 18 and they're like, man, that Bonnaroo lineup looks amazing, but I've never camped a day in my life. Like I don't think I'm comfortable doing that. Well, if we can get them out there for a day and they can feel and experience Bonnaroo for a day and go, man, I'm coming back next year. I don't know how to figure it out. You know, there's no better way to introduce people to it than that way. So, you know, and I think also just, you know, the when we decoupled the tickets and put, you know, like really kind of choose your own adventure here of, you know, how do you want to experience, you know, Bonnaroo, and giving people, you know, giving the fans the options to do this however they want to do it. And whether that's, you've never camped, great, we'll build you a tent. You can just walk in and throw your stuff in it. Or, you know, you want to hike out there with it on your back, you can do that too. You know? So I think just making sure that we're, you know, responsive to that and trying to make the event as accessible as possible, for folks to come out and really enjoy it. Cause it's, you know, it's great.
And I've been skeptical of a lot of those moves, by the way. And it, most of them appear to have worked pretty well.
When we left last year, Brian and Russ and I all said this was a we didn't use the word, but I got a text from Brad Parker almost immediately after saying this was a renaissance year. Did it feel that way to you, and do you still feel that way?
You know, I think
we were energized anyway, for
100%, 100%.
We live in the weeds. And so it's like, it's one of those, like when you can finally get the opportunity to see the forest from the trees and go, man, that, you know, fundamentally how we want to produce festivals is, It's the totality of the experience from the very first time you interact with the brand, whether that's on Instagram or on the website, mm-hmm. to when you get home at night after the event. We've got to nail every single component of that. And, you know, if you miss one thing in there, you know, like somebody has a bad bathroom experience, or somebody's, you know, doesn't have a good experience waiting in line to get into anything. And it's like, we've got to nail that all the way through. And I feel like last year we really hit a good stride on all of that and trying to get the totality of what that experience looks like. And again, coming out of that, you just feel the energy, you feel that from everybody. The staff feel it, the fans of course are jazzed about it. So.
All right. Well, Tim Smith, Director of Festivals and Strategic Initiatives, we have to know, where does tuba come from?
It's not as great a story as you think.
They never are. The nickname stories never are.
when the production company I was working for, straight out of college, when I started there, so I played at the University of Kansas. I played tuba in the band. And so I played the marching band. I played in the basketball band. Kansas has a good basketball
band
program,
nerd over
so
here.
Absolutely. We run the world. So when I started at this production company, they're, you know, I'm the new guy. It's like, well, let's haze the new guy. And they're like, oh, well, you're, and I was actually still in school at the time. And they're like, oh, well, what, you play in the band? And I'm like, yeah, I play in the band. I'm like, what do you play? I'm like, tuba. And they're like, oh, we're going to call you tuba.
Yeah, see, that's what I was thinking. It could have been xylophone.
I'm like, I'm not ashamed of it.
You could have been xylophone.
I'm not ashamed of it. You know, and I'm like, look, y'all can, you know, Kansas is going to Final Fours, you know. I'm like, yeah, you can watch for me on TV. I'm the courtside seats playing my horn, you know. So, but, you know, the thing is, as I move through the industry, legal name is Tim Smith, which is entirely forgettable. And so there's more people in this industry that don't know my legal name, but they know tuba.
There's a
so
lot.
You're the only tuba I've ever met. You are the only tuba that I've ever met. So.
And okay, final one for me completely. That's total throwaway. Mr. Rock Chalk Jayhawk. As I get ready for the March, well, I shouldn't call it that, the NCAA tournament, what's going on with your Jayhawks? They're not ranked this late in the season. What's the deal?
Oh man, we might be ranked. You know, I think they'll surprise some folks this year for sure. But you know, this really this is the evolution of NIL coming into focus. You know, and what the transfer portal and how you can straight up pay players now. You know, and I think it's a different game of what it means to develop players, and just I think it's you know, I think when we started the year, obviously preseason ranked number one, like that was the numbers on the page look good.
I was shocked when I saw they weren't ranked, and they might be because they just won one the other night, but I need to know, man, where do I lay the money, man? How do I fill out the bracket?
That's the wrong question. Cause I'm totally biased. I'll have them winning the championship and I'll lose the bracket.
Well, cause I'll usually pick KU at least, you know, three or four games.
Pick with your heart.
Anyway.
There you go. So what were the takeaways? Brian, you know, I think the industry's in a good place. It's interesting to hear him talk about, you know, the differences in festivals. I loved hearing his, and I wanted to start there on purpose, how he got into it, because we've had enough of people, Brad, Corey, all the way back to Ashley Capps. People get into this business because of passion. They love it. Nobody goes to school for this. I don't know where you would. I don't know. You know, nobody comes out of high school and said, I'm going to go to college and learn to run festivals.
The closest thing you can do is get a communications degree, and that's probably not going to work.
Correct.
You can spend a lot of money on that, and you didn't need to. Not if you can, you should, but if you don't need to.
Just show up, volunteer, sell T-shirts, do whatever. Keep showing up. Keep showing up. Keep showing up.
Be on time. Park cars again. And eventually, you won't park cars anymore.
Yeah, be on time is the key thing.
I know several people. I don't think he's there anymore. My guy, Roger Shutters, here in town. I'll go ahead and give him his name. Not that anybody knows or matters. Hadn't seen him in a while, but we went to high school together. And then we didn't talk for a long time for just whatever reason. And then I see him at the festival. He's parking cars. A couple of years later, he's still parking cars. A little bit later, he's in VIP artist relations hospitality, where you don't really have to work at that point. And this is now his thing. He eventually got on a payroll, and then several times because he couldn't drive, he would jump in the car with me and I'd drop him off where he needed to be. This was one of his favorite things he's ever done.
Yeah.
And he didn't get rich doing it. He just continued to show up. And that's how it works in so many industries, really, but in this one. But a takeaway real quick I want to get to before I forget was when we were talking about the so many arena shows this year, how many there are, and how expensive they are. I was shocked to hear that there was more this year. I just hadn't paid attention to that because they are so expensive. My God, I bought Pearl Jam tickets for Christmas for people. My God, that'll never happen again. The pricing on that, I ain't doing that again. But more and more going backwards, and I've talked on many podcasts before where I'm like, how many times can we keep going up on prices? And I talk about that on everything, Bonnaroo included. And the more I pay attention, the more I look at what everybody else is doing, Bonnaroo is the best value in the world.
Oh, no question.
It's the best price point value you're ever going to find. It's barely an opinion. It's pretty much fact. When you stack it up against everything else, what they offer, what Bonnaroo offers, what Lala, what ACL, what Glastonbury, what everybody offers, Bonnaroo is the best dollar for dollar value you're going to find.
Yeah.
And that is, I mean, that's a testament to them, to understanding that, to understanding that this is a difficult weekend. It is very, very hard. There are many times when people get done with this weekend and they say, never again.
Right.
Never again. And then, like, 4 months roll by, and like, it wasn't that expensive. And I'm like, it was kind of fun. 6 months roll by, I kind of want to go back again, right? I mean, that's a whole strategic way of doing it. So, yeah, dollar for dollar, doesn't get better than Bonnaroo.
No, and you're right. And if you're going to do it multiple times, especially, you know, buy your ticket on layaway, start buying your stuff. You know,
and
you
certainly buy on the farm the week year before, you're going to get the cheapest price.
Yeah. And
point,
once you buy your cot, your tent, your whatever, your easy up, you know, start buying your groceries, waters or whatever. Don't wait till it's, you know, $200-$400 all at once.
Yeah. And all those essentials, pop ups, and all those things. Now that you got them, that price is baked in now. You don't have to do that again.
That's correct. So that's a good point.
When you go to Lollapalooza, you still got to get a Hilton for $500 a night.
That's a great point.
You know?
Everything I've got now is I'm not spending much at all. That's a good point.
Yeah.
All right, man, that was a lot of fun.
Was
been we've been trying to get that one nailed down since last June, and appreciate him doing it. The fact that he even knows what this stupid show is amazing to me.
Long time listener, first time caller. He's an old school on everything.
I love it.
I guess real quick on our way out here, we got jobs in real life, and sometimes it gets in the way as far as this ticket giveaway. We're gonna do that. That's happening very, very soon, but we'll roll it with it for another week. Do you have something you want to throw out there?
What's a good question? Yeah,
sorry to put you on the spot.
No, that's all right. I thought I had one. If you wanted to do a job, let's stay with the tuba. If you wanted to work for a festival, what would be the job you would want?
What's your dream job in the festival world? Let's just put it that way. It could be outlandish if you want. I want to be Ashley Capps, or I want to clean the toilets.
Or I want to book the bands. And actually, if you were booking the bands, who would you book? Let's just put a part B on that one, because Brian and I know we've both been on those committees where we've been involved in festivals, and everybody comes in thinking, I've got the ticket, man. Book Jimmy Buffett, and you'll be a ginormous hit. And Buffett ain't doing it. Of course, he's dead now. Yeah. But everybody thinks they know.
Yeah, you don't think everybody in this room thought about that already?
Exactly. That's me. I know I told you about going up to Brian Benson at Moon River and saying, have you thought about booking Dolly? Yeah. I was half kidding, but he was like, seriously, dude, really?
Never thought about Dolly.
That's a good one. I'm going to write that down.
I've got an example of that, too. It's not coming to head right. My head.
Everybody thinks they know. All right, man. Great week. Thank you. Thanks, Tuba. Thanks, Brian. Russ, miss you. Look forward to seeing you back.
See you next week, Russ.
Bye.
See ya.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.